You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Good morning and welcome to the Roto Experts Weekend Morning Show. I'm your host today, George. Well, the host for a little bit, George Kurtz. Mike Blewett will be joining us shortly, having some technical issues with Mr. Blewett, but he'll be back shortly. Super Bowl Sunday, what we've all been waiting for, the culmination of the 2016 NFL season. The fantasy season's already over. Maybe you're playing in one-and-done leagues, two-and-done leagues, however you want to work your fantasy playoffs. Maybe you got a draft, and today we'll decide who wins your playoff league. So a lot of fun today. Like I said, Atlanta versus New England. We've been beating it to death all week. Just about on every show, it's all we talk about. Who's going to win, break the game down? Can Bill Belichick take Julio Jones out? Will he try to take Julio Jones out? What will the game plan be? Will Matt Ryan come up small in a big game? Maybe he will. Maybe he won't. Will the game be, 75 points? I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. And right now, we have Mr. Blewett. How you doing, Mike?
What's going on, George? A little technical difficulty to start the show, but it's Super Sunday. Are you fired up?
No. It's 7 a.m.
Are you ready to go? Are we ready to do this?
You're fired up now. You got 12 hours to kill. You got to burn yourself out by 6:30.
I am. I think I might by the end of the show. So I'm pretty fired up. I'm ready to go. And all I can say is we got some good news and bad news. I'll give you the bad news first. The bad news is the last day of the year for NFL football, last day of the season for NFL football. So that's the bummer. You and I talked about it. It's a little bittersweet when you get down to the end here. But we have what appears to be a good game in front of us. Obviously, we always expect and hope that the Super Bowl will be a good game, but based on a lot of the predictions I'm hearing, everybody's expecting a pretty close game. So hopefully it's not a harbinger of everybody not knowing what they're talking about and rather us having a close game. So I think we at least both feel pretty good about that, pretty evenly matched teams to an extent.
All I want today is a good game. I just want a close game. I want to be entertained. I don't want to be watching the commercials and going, oh, wow, that was a nice commercial because the game's terrible. That's all I want. Yeah. Good, competitive game. I really don't care who wins. I honestly don't. Just give me a good game, and I expect a lot of points to be put on the board.
Yeah. So you don't have a rooting interest of any kind? Is there somebody you'd feel better for? I mean, you don't have a particular affinity for Matt Ryan or Julio Jones necessarily, or even on the other side. So anybody that you could see pulling for, it'd be nice for them, this player, to get their first win or, on either side of the ball.
Nope. Good game. It's all I want is a good game. I don't care if New England wins. I'm not, they've won 1,000 times. They shouldn't win anymore. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
I just want to see a good game, entertaining, some big plays, that sort of thing. Come down to the fourth quarter. Come down to the last play. I'd love it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Steelers fan, and I know a ton of New England Patriots fans. It's just having lived in Boston for 8 years, I certainly know a ton of people that are on the Pats side today. Now, I'd be lying if I didn't say, it would be nice for me to see a different team win, but I don't begrudge that at all. I mean, they've been the most successful team. They've kicked everybody's butt in the AFC this year. And they've earned it. If they end up beating the Falcons fair and square today, then who am I to complain? Obviously, I have a rooting interest for Matt Ryan. So I will keep that going. It's not like I went out and bought a jersey or anything like that. But certainly happy for him on the awards that he got last night. And ultimately, I have a rooting interest for the Falcons today. That being said, I made my prediction yesterday. I don't think they're going to be able to pull it off. George, you said yesterday 38-35, so you like the high-scoring game. I have it a little bit more tempered. That total wouldn't surprise me. I have it 27-23 Pats, and I think that's the way it's going to go. But, we're both predicting a one-score game, and New England has played in 6 Super Bowls to this point with Brady and Belichick. None have been decided by more than 4 points, so it stands to reason that this could be equally close. Now, speaking of those awards, you and I had talked for some time about the MVP race, and we were a little perplexed at one point when it seemed like Matt Ryan wasn't in the conversation. As it got really late in the year, he kind of made a late charge because the Falcons were hot. But Ultimately, he pulled it off, and people thought it might be Brady. People thought it might be Rodgers. You know, I could have gone either way with my vote on Rodgers or Ryan, and there he is. He's the MVP. It's a new name in the mix, so it's been a while, I feel like, since we've seen a name that we didn't expect to pull down the award.
Yeah, I agree. I thought this was Ryan easy. I don't even think it was all that close. I don't think no one expected this from him. Nobody. He was terrible the past couple of years. You and I were talking during preseason or draft time about how far he'd fall down on fantasy rankings, where he was barely top 18. You know, Brady, even though he was going to be suspended for four games, was still in the top 10, top 12. Rodgers was probably number one, maybe number two behind Cam Newton, depending on how you looked at that. So, by far, he had a great season. The numbers were all there. No one saw this coming from him or the Falcons. I said, I thought this was his award to lose.
Yeah, and Ryan received 25 from the nationwide panel of 50 media members who cover the league. New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady finished second with 10 votes. Dallas Cowboys running back Zeke Elliott and Oakland Raiders quarterback Derek Carr each received 6. So Dak Prescott really not in the mix there. Ryan also won the Associated Press NFL Offensive Player of the Year. He beat Green Bay. He beat Aaron Rodgers 15.5-11. I mean, ultimately, Ryan's numbers, George and I talked about it in that week 17. We were wondering if he could chase down 5,000 yards. He was pretty close. 4,944, 38 touchdowns, only 7 picks. And he led the NFL with a 117.1 passer rating. They scored a league-high 540 points. We are stats guys. We parse this a lot. There's kind of no arguing with that. When he leads the league in those several categories, I think Rodgers had a couple of more touchdowns. Brees probably had about 150 more yards or so. But here he is. Happy for him and, you know, a big-time award for him. Defensive Player of the Year went to Khalil Mack. And he deserves all the accolades he gets. He's a great player. I just don't know if I saw that one coming based on how we were tracking him and his play during this season.
Would agree somewhat. Like I said, first of all, I'll say it again. I don't care about these awards. I honestly don't. I think they're a little off. Some of them political. Some of them are a joke. You don't know what people are thinking. At the time, you see people get votes. Like, how did this guy get a vote? You know, so it just, I don't put a whole lot of stock in these things. Khalil Mack, I did wonder, was he being awarded the award because of the great year he had last year? And this year was good? You know, that sort of thing. Who did you think should have won?
You know, that's a tough one. I feel like Eric Berry could have been in the mix for the award. He played his tail off. Landon Collins is another guy that played really well this season. I do think the Defensive Player of the Year award is kind of tough because not unlike, I guess, the offensive side of the ball, you have guys that are kind of high profile and making high profile plays that get it. It sort of eliminates interior defensive linemen. It eliminates any other guys that aren't whose position doesn't lend itself towards stats, whether that's a host of interceptions or a ton of tackles or sacks. So in this instance, I just was surprised by the name. I can't really sit here and post a huge argument against Khalil Mack, but I just was a little surprised to see that. I just thought somebody else's name might get called. It's almost because Kuechly missed a few games and J.J. Watt was out, it almost left a vacuum of who else might be in the mix there.
I think that's fair to say, sure. I think it's absolutely more than fair. I think it's true. J.J. Watt plays. He's probably the odds-on favorite. But because he did, he left the vacuum, left the wide open, really. And maybe nobody had the great season. I guess Vic Beasley could have been in this conversation as well for 15.5 sacks or whatever he had. So, but really not a dominant player. It doesn't bother me that Mac won. He probably wouldn't have been my choice, but it doesn't bother me he won.
Yeah, so that's a little bit about the awards. We can touch on that later. George and I are going to talk about the Hall of Fame and exactly what went down there. Terrell Owens is obviously not happy with the process and what happened last night. I want to get into that in the next segment. But really, George, the one story related to the Super Bowl that I feel like is important to talk about this morning is something that you and I have talked about for 2 weeks, about Alex Mack's leg, as to whether or not we never see a fibula injury listed unless it's something related to a break. Sure enough, Alex Mack, Pro Bowl center for the Falcons, has a fracture in his left fibula that he suffered in the NFC Championship game. And you mentioned it I believe it was Sunday, that last Sunday, that Rams defensive end Jack Youngblood famously played in Super Bowl 14 with a broken fibula. Charles Woodson had played. Terrell Owens had played with these leg injuries. And Alex Mack is going to be added to the list.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think we all knew this was probably what it was. You don't hear a fibular injury. You know, it's hard to get a bad bruise on your fibula where it really would show up on an injury report and it not be broken. You know, so I am not surprised at all. I am really not surprised at all. So I think this is interesting. Before all the all the propaganda, oh, he looks great in practice, playing great, looks moving around well. Yeah, let's see when people are diving at his legs and hitting him. Especially now they know what the exact nature of the injury is. I think it's going to be very. I don't think he'll be able to make the game. Not the entire game. I think he'll start. I don't think he'll finish. And as I said, when I made my prediction yesterday and Friday on Old School Fantasy, if Mac was going to be hindered or out, that was going to be enough for me to go New England's way here. You know, I think it's another thing that puts makes New England even a bigger favorite now.
I would have to agree. I think people will say it's just one offensive lineman. It's just the center. Alex Mack is their best offensive lineman. He is a huge key to the run game. According to Adam Schefter's report here, one source said that if it were the regular season, he could miss 6 to 8 weeks, but he's going to be out there today. So you have to consider the seriousness of this injury. They're calling it a chip fracture. It's the same leg that he had a plate inserted to just 3 years ago. So he didn't practice the week after the game, the NFC Championship game last week. He's been limited all week here. He's obviously a tough guy. He's going to go for it. But I think we'd have to, as George just stated, be concerned about his ability to finish the game.
It would be 6 to 8 weeks. That's pretty much all you need to know. He'd be out 6 to 8 weeks if this is the regular season.
That's right.
There's just no way he's anywhere near full strength. And I guess they'll shoot him up, of course, and with painkillers, and maybe they can block out the pain somewhat. But and that's great. Maybe that'll allow him to get through the game. But more importantly, what percentage is he at? 70? 50? 60? Is it going to keep going down as the game goes on? He's the key to that offensive line.
Yes, he absolutely is. And this offensive line has been pieced together through draft picks and free agency, and they've done a really nice job. It's been sort of the story, the underrated story in the NFL season to some extent, is how successful the teams have been with great offensive line play. Not just these two teams today, but obviously Dallas's great success this year, Oakland's great success this year, have been anchored by their ability to protect the quarterback, their ability in most cases to get the run game going. So it is not a situation where he's going to be able to come in and out. That is not really the way they typically would go about a injury to a center. Obviously, if he's trying to manage some pain, I think they'll do the best they can piecing in the backup center. But it wouldn't be a situation, George, where he comes in for a series, out for a series, in for a series, out for a series. That could create exchange issues, and then that's the last thing that they need.
No, it's terrible timing for Atlanta. Bad news. I'm sure they would have liked to have kept this news in-house as well. Listen, 6 to 8 weeks tells you how serious the injury is. It's not something that's a little crack, no big deal. He'd be out. If this wasn't the Super Bowl, he wouldn't be playing. Sure, he's had 2 weeks off, which is nice, but that's not enough time to heal that bone. It's just not.
Yeah, and if things weren't bad enough, it doesn't really matter, because George and I talked about Julio's toe injury a little bit yesterday, and he is going to go. I'm sure he'll play as many plays as he possibly can and likely a nearly full load of snaps. But he's likely to have postseason surgery on his toe, and that's just another situation where I think Julio's really going to push through it. As you stated yesterday, the Packers would love to have had him on the sidelines, and he looked no worse for wear. But if he has to be in there for 70 snaps today, it could have an impact of some sort.
It could. I mean, there's always a chance he twists it again or pops up or someone steps on it, whatever. It could certainly happen. That being said, not really worried about Julio. I think he'll be fine. I think even if that happens, the adrenaline will get him through the game. I think this will be a situation where if it was the regular season and one of those occurrences happened, you know, he got stepped on, he twisted, next week would be a problem. This week, I think with all the adrenaline flowing, there's no way. Maybe he'll miss a snap or two if something happens, but he's in the game.
Yeah, so, George, your coach, you being a Cowboys fan, your coach, Jason Garrett, wins Coach of the Year. Deserved?
Once again, I don't see how this was going to be close with anybody.
Yeah.
He has his third string quarterback. Remember, Romo was supposed to start, got hurt. Kellen Moore was the backup, gone, he got hurt. Then it came down to Dak Prescott. No one saw this coming from Dak Prescott. I'm not saying it's because of Jason Garrett that Dak became the quarterback he became, but he's certainly a big part of it. I mean, and once again, no one saw Dallas being a playoff team. Even with Romo, no one really saw Dallas being a playoff team this year after the last year's 4-12 debacle.
So, I did not.
Yeah,
I thought the Giants had that division. I did not have Dallas as a wild card. Actually, I had Atlanta as a wild card, and I had Seattle because I thought Arizona was going to win that division.
So did I.
But I had
Arizona winning as well. I had Arizona in the playoffs. I don't remember if I had winning the division or not, but I had Arizona and Seattle both in. I mean, who are the other candidates there? Gase in Miami? Okay, he's got an argument, but he had his full team. Yeah, in the AFC,
they went 13-3.
Right,
they dominated with two rookies at key positions. As you said, they had to, in mid to late August, figure out exactly what they were going to do with the quarterback position. And Dak played really well. I think that's a testament to
they overachieved. I don't think there's any doubt they overachieved.
Big time, and clearly there's going to be remorse about the loss to the Packers. There's no telling exactly what would have happened against Atlanta, but
they'd have lost to Atlanta.
Yeah, I didn't like their chances against Atlanta, but in any event, nice little accolades there for you and the boys going back.
Not for me. I don't know.
The 2017.
I don't know Jason Garrett. Don't work for Dallas.
Yes, this is true. This is true. But good award for him. Good award for the franchise and Jason Garrett. Well deserved. So we'll talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame next. Keep talking about the game today. I'm going to hit George up with trivia all morning long. We'll get into a little bit of baseball at some point to break up the Super Bowl. I wouldn't call it monotony, but the Super Bowl consistency and the stories. We can only dive so deep as we are now 11 hours from game time. It's Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning for the next 3 hours. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. Mike and George here all morning until 10 a.m. You can hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. Hit George up at George Kurtz. I'm at Mike Blewett. You can give us a call this morning if you want to talk Super Bowl trivia. If you want to give us your prediction, feel free to do that. It's 84-FNTSY. And George, last night, you and I were texting. It's something we talked about during a couple of segments yesterday. The Hall of Fame voting process. Now, you and I were pretty adamant about our guys that we thought would make it. And Terrell Owens was one of those. LaDainian Tomlinson was the guy that we thought was the surefire lock. LaDainian Tomlinson, congratulations to all those who made it. LaDainian Tomlinson, four-time first-team All-Pro. He had 13,684 career yards. LaDainian Tomlinson makes it. So no arguments there, right?
No, I think LaDainian Tomlinson was a mortal lock. He had obviously a Hall of Fame, a great season, great career. No off-the-field problems, which always seems to be an issue.
Yeah, I guess the only, and I, you know, there's no reason really to bring this up other than people that would like to examine one black mark on his career, was that AFC Championship game in New England where he had an injury and he went to the sidelines after not being able to go at full strength and just sort of sat and pouted on the bench on the sidelines. And simultaneously, Phil Rivers is out there with a torn ACL playing. I remember people bashed him quite a bit for that. I thought it was heavy-handed at the time. And ultimately, it hasn't impacted his legacy, I don't think. He works for the NFL Network. I think he does a nice job there. I saw some people kind of criticizing this process because, frankly, the guy that we put number two on our list that we thought most likely to make it was Terrell Owens. Terrell Owens not happy with the process. I can't say I'm stunned because I know how people feel about him. In fact, George, I was out to dinner last night. We were texting. And I said, man, people just hate T.O. They don't want to vote him in. Media personalities like Jason Whitlock were very outspoken about T.O. not deserving to be in, that he wasn't a good teammate, that he didn't make teams better, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm not really of that mindset. I don't think T.O. was a great teammate. I do think he might have been a divisive player in the locker room, but I feel like he did enough on the field in order to make himself worthy of Canton.
Listen, I think we discussed this yesterday as well. I, once again, don't care about the Hall of Fame. I think it's because of these reasons that I don't care about it, by the way. You're bringing up one of them. These people have personal agendas, personal biases, so they just they look for reasons not to put somebody in. In this case, he's a bad – and he was. I don't think doubt he was a bad teammate, locker room. He was an IME player. I don't think there's any doubt about that. He was an IME player. Certainly was that. But the numbers are the numbers. You can't tell me he's not better than what? Half the other wide receivers in the Hall of Fame? Maybe more? I mean, you can make an argument he's top 10 wide receiver of all time. I mean, really, you
can. Absolutely, you could.
So I think it's kind of a joke that he's not in there. That being said, I don't feel one little bit bad for him. You know, he brought this upon himself. We've seen this in other sports as well. You know the writers are the ones voting you in. You act like a jerk to the writers. You act like a jerk around everybody else. They're going to punish you for it. He will get in. His numbers are too good not to get in, but they're punishing him. And the way they punish you is they make you wait. You know, maybe it's another year. Maybe it's another 2 years, another 3 years. You know, the baseball writers get vilified for how they vote. Football is a complete joke. I mean, you know, this is like, you know, double secret backdoor meetings of who gets in and who doesn't. No one has to really identify anything they do. It's strange how football goes about it.
Yeah, I mean, so five modern era guys got in. The players who did get in overall, we can talk about each individually. But LaDainian Tomlinson gets in along with Kurt Warner, Jason Taylor, Terrell Davis, and Morton Anderson, another kicker in. Jerry Jones makes it as a contributor. Kenny Easley, the safety for the Seahawks during the 80s, makes it as a seniors committee candidate. So basically, the five modern era selections were chosen from the list of 15 finalists who we reviewed yesterday. And then 46 media members plus two Hall of Famers, currently James Lofton and Dan Fouts, trimmed that list to 10, and then five yesterday. And then they take the five of the modern era selections, not easily, and they give him a yes-no vote. So basically, Terrell Owens and Isaac Bruce and a couple of others don't even make the cut to get down to five to give him the yes-no, thumbs up, thumbs down. So Terrell Owens is probably even more incensed with it. He was, frankly, very vocal on Twitter, hashtagging flawed process and when you align expectations with reality, you will never be disappointed. To my family, friends, and fans, I'm a Hall of Famer. These are all tweets from Terrell Owens. HOF is a total joke. Honestly, doesn't mean anything to me to get in beyond this point. Now, that's that mirrors comments I've seen from players in the past. Chris Carter had to wait a really long time, and he was very vocal and critical of the process. So you and I talked about his stats yesterday, George. He's second all-time in receiving yards with nearly 16,000 yards, third in NFL career receiving touchdowns with a 153. He led the NFL in touchdowns three different seasons. First, five-time All-Pro. Talk about Pro Bowls all you want, and that doesn't mean that much. All-Pro is a big deal. It's hard to make those first-team All-Pros, and he did it five times. So I understand him being angry with it. There's clearly vendettas at play here. Or the NFL process really is about being a good teammate and contributing to the success of your team.
Listen, there have been other guys that are in the Pro Bowl that weren't good teammates. He's not the first, won't be the last. All right, I mean, listen, I mean, how can you, over the number you just said, how can you honestly tell me Terrell Owens is not a Hall of Famer? And I'm not defending guy. I didn't like the guy. Even as a Cowboy, I didn't like him.
Me neither.
And he's a very hard guy to like. But you can't tell me he's not a Hall of Famer. You just can't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why, like I said, I don't take these things seriously. You know, I think they're all—it's all political. It's all, you know, backdoor stuff. You know, I've heard in baseball where certain writers will tell you, you know, a guy, listen, I'll give you a Hall of Fame vote. Don't worry about it. It's gonna give you a good story here. You know, and that's why all of a sudden this guy out of nowhere, who's a terrible player, gets a 10th place vote. I was like, what? How did this guy get a vote? And that's why I love and for baseball next year, the votes will be public. So you know, no more of this stuff will happen now. Because if you do stuff like this, you got to defend it. Of why you voted for this guy. You're going to look like an idiot. You know, I wish football would do the same. Put these ball votes out there.
Guarantee things will change, too, George. You guarantee things are going to change
next
year.
Absolutely. I mean, once again, when your name is on it, and you got to defend it on Twitter and on Facebook and Snapchat and everything, or, you know, Instagram, whatever else, you got to defend all your picks, all of a sudden you're going to make better ones.
No doubt. There's not going to be guys that you see down the end of the Baseball Hall of Fame voting list with one and two votes because their buddy or their friends with a writer and he threw him a vote. It's throwing away a vote, unfortunately. The vote like that could have gone to somebody that was deserving. So ultimately, we'll see how that plays out. But the other players that make it, Morton Anderson, he has a host of kicking records. You and I talked about it yesterday. This might be the year for him to get in because there's a lot of good players coming down the pike. Randy Moss, et cetera, will be eligible next year. Terrell Davis, you and I talked about it yesterday. If you pushed me to really make a decision, like you and I aren't going to argue against this, and I'm not really going to grandstand about it, but if you push me on it, I would have said Davis is out.
I can't see how you put a guy in who only had three Hall of Fame seasons. And then one other good season, his rookie season was good, and that's it. After that, there's nothing. Nothing. So we had four good NFL seasons. Three of them were exceptional. And that's a Hall of Fame? I mean, what happened you got to be able to play availability. That's one of the most important abilities in football is availability. And he didn't have it. Anyway, you look at it, he didn't have it. He had three great seasons. I no denying, they were Hall of Fame seasons. Is that enough? Really, is that enough? Would we put it in any other position when we only had three great seasons? Would we?
No. I don't think so. The only guy that we talk about in that same light is Gale Sayers, who was transcendent in many ways in his ability to return kicks and, is a larger-than-life character. And ultimately, that earned him enough. But I have to concur. You know, after the 98 season where he had the 2,000 yards and he won the NFL MVP and he was a Super Bowl MVP, all in that same year. He played 17 games after that. After he was 26 years old, George, he played 17 games. It petered out. Obviously, he had injuries. I'm not criticizing him for not being able to make it, but if I'm looking at his resume, I would say, well, what happened after he won the MVP? And basically, he didn't do anything. He ran for a combined 1,100, 1,200 yards after that moment in 3 years, and he was retired before he was 30. That's not
unheard
of as a running back.
Doesn't this open up a whole new can of worms? Because can you say
think.
Kurt Warner now has to be in. He had much more than three Hall of Fame seasons, right?
Yeah.
Every quarterback, every good quarterback. Now, I'll say it again. I have nothing against Terrell Davis. He was a great player. Just too short a time. I mean, we just got to put everybody in now that has a couple of good seasons. You're in. No problem. You just set the precedent now. How many guys are going to be above him on the all-time rushing list, touchdown list, that aren't going to get in? Because they played much longer than he did. You can make an argument they contributed to their team, assuming they stayed with the one team, bigger value than Terrell Davis was. I know he won the Super Bowl. I get it. But there's no way I could have voted him in. I mean, not even close.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be tons of guys that are coming up for Hall of Fame votes. You have guys like Edgerrin James ran for 12,000 yards. Does he get in? He had virtually twice as many yards as Terrell Davis had. I'm putting Terrell Davis as 55th all-time on the career list. He had 7,600 career yards. And you have guys, Frank Gore has 13,000 yards currently, and he's still going. He will likely double the output for Terrell Davis in rushing yards. Is Frank Gore a Hall of Famer? LaDainian gets in. Edgerrin James is really high on the list. He's 12th all-time with 12,000 yards. Fred Taylor has 11,700 yards. Steven Jackson, 11,500 yards, basically. So I bring these names up just to illustrate, are these guys surefire Hall of Famers? I don't think you can say that for a couple of the names I just mentioned. Frank Gore really putting together an incredible resume, and by the end of next year, say he plays a full season next year, Frank Gore is likely to pass Eric Dickerson, Jerome Bettis, and LaDainian Tomlinson. He needs 630 yards to do it. I mean, if he's Frank Gore's top five all time, does that get him in? Do you think of Frank Gore as a surefire Hall of Famer? I don't.
No, neither do I, but the numbers are going to be so much better than Terrell Davis's. I mean, what's going to be your argument to keep him out? Because I think he is close. And I could probably, when I would look at the stats, we really break it down when his time comes, I might even say yes.
Yeah, and frankly, if he does that, what I just said, next year, he's probably in, right? Top five all time when he retires.
Yeah, I just, the argument's going to be this. Because he was great for such a short period of time, but flamed out because of whatever injuries. If you're a baseball fan, you're going to compare him probably to Sandy Koufax, who sort of did a similar thing where his career wasn't long, although it was much longer than Davis's, but he gets in. I mean, Koufax, what he played, one, three, looks like 12, 14 years, which is, for baseball is good, but not a lot. Baseball, you have to play at least 10. Football doesn't have that requirement. You know, so I think that's where the comparison comes here. But even that, Koufax blows that away. He
Koufax also has an argument of the single greatest five-year span in pitching history, right? In modern pitching history.
But I'm sure, I'm guessing Davis fans will say his 3 years is one of the best three running back. That's going to be the argument there. And that maybe football, you can't equate years playing in football to years playing in baseball, which I would agree. You know, baseball careers are generally much longer than football careers. By the way, I get that.
Two active players that passed Terrell Davis on the career rushing yardage list this year, D'Angelo Williams and LaShawn McCoy. One probably making an argument, one will never get anywhere near Canton and D'Angelo Williams. So we'll talk a little bit more about this, and we'll keep focusing on the game. Some trivia to do with George. Mike and George back after this. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. George and I are here until 10 o'clock as we continue to talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame, Hall of Famers that got in last night. So Kurt Warner, George, we talked about him a little bit yesterday. He gets in. The worst conspiracy theory I saw on Twitter last night is that all the NFL Network guys got in with TD, Warner, and Tomlinson, that there was some sort of backdoor. Although, frankly, you were just talking about there, you wonder how these things come up. But that was the worst conspiracy theory I saw last night, was that the NFL Network guys were awarded for their connection with the network.
Guy, I never even thought of that. You know, but once again, nothing would shock me anyway, but I doubt that's the case. I think it's more coincidence than anything else. Once again, I don't think that Terrell Davis should have gotten in, but I get why people think he should. I do understand that Warner, I think I said yesterday I would put him in. I think he's borderline. I don't think he's a mortal lock by any means, but I think his numbers are there. And who else are we talking about now?
The three employees were Tomlinson's
a lock. Yeah, he was a lock.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could. I mean, if you're arguing against Tomlinson, then no one gets in, right? Really, no one's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was of his time this century. Who's the only other running back in his class? Adrian Peterson. Right, that's probably the only guy this century that you would put in Tomlinson's class.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'm forgetting someone, but for me, Tomlinson was as good a running back as I've ever seen. I wouldn't put him at the top of the list, but if you ask me about the top 10 guys that I've seen play at that position, he's in it, and he may press for the top five. That's always a difficult and a fun debate to have. You know, I guess the only other guy you would put, George, I was just thinking about it during the break, the one other guy that you would put in the streaking comet category where he had an incredible career is Earl Campbell. You know, he didn't have the longest of careers at the running back position, but even, you know, he only played 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, it's basically 8 seasons or so. So he played from 23 to 30. He did lead the NFL in rushing, though, 3 times. 74 career touchdowns, almost entirely with the Oilers. He did play with the Saints in his final season and a half. But that's the only other guy I could think of that is kind of in that short career, big impact kind of category.
Yeah, I would agree. Like I said, I'll say it again. The Hall of Fame, really don't care. Too much... I mean, we're hinting at it all with conspiracy theories. You know why? Because people believe stuff like this happens because of how they go about things in the Hall of Fame. Terrell Owens, he doesn't get in because, they're looking for reasons. He wasn't a good teammate. Is that enough? Really enough to make him not a Hall of Famer? I mean, think about it. I mean, just searching for a reason not to put him in when you start throwing this stuff up. Because the numbers are overwhelming. And if someone's a borderline candidate, then I get it. Okay, that could be enough to knock him out. But when you're talking that you're guys who... you know, you've already put up all the numbers, top 10 this, top 10 that. Then you're searching for a reason. I'm sorry, not a good teammate is not a good enough reason. Does he didn't make teams better? How can that be? Getting 1,500 yards a season, 10-plus, how did he not make the team better? You know, someone has to explain this to me. I didn't like him on Dallas. Dallas was a better team with them. You know, that's just the way it is. So many wide receivers are divas. They're IME players nowadays. I mean, you think, well, Elmore's the only one. What are you going to do when guys who are in today's game, Beckham comes to mind, and I'll be another IME player. I mean, when he's up there, if you're assuming his career continues, he doesn't get in either. I mean, you know, not everyone's going to be Jerry Rice.
You know, the interesting thing, too, about this is that for the most part, listen, T.O. did a lot of foolish stuff on the field, but I never saw him check out on the team or cost the team in any material way. He would get fired up on the sidelines, but frankly, we see players like doing that now, Dez Bryant and others get fired up when they're not getting the ball. So, and T.O. does the Sharpie, all that nonsense, which has since, you know, morphed into penalties galore for anybody celebrating. But T.O. never walked off the sidelines during a game, frankly, like Randy Moss did. And Randy Moss is going to be up for a Hall of Fame induction next year, and I guarantee Randy Moss cruises in.
Does he? Doesn't he have a lot of same issues as Terrell Owens?
I think so.
Or is he rehabilitated those?
See, that's another thing.
Like, I would say Moss
Randy
is
Moss
more.
Gets an opera.
I think he was more disruptive than Owens.
You do?
I do.
Yeah. I actually used to think that as well. I thought he was more disruptive on the field than was T.O. His off-the-field stuff, he had the one incident in Minnesota, and it wasn't a pattern of behavior. I think Terrell Owens established a long, unfortunate pattern of behavior with fighting with his teammates, literally, all the press conferences and doing sit-ups in the driveway, all that nonsense. He was trying to put on a show and get your popcorn ready, all that kind of stuff. I think created an image for T.O. that was unlikable for many people. I'd never thought him to be a disruption on the field. I thought Moss was more so. He got moved around to a lot of teams as well. Randy Moss did. I don't know whether the Pats' experience and helped to rehab his image some, but frankly, he played for a while after that, bouncing around to different teams, the Niners, etc. But to your point, I wonder if people hold that against Randy Moss and say, you know what, he's an all-time great player, but we got to keep him out for year number one because he acted like a fool in certain instances. I mean, he did walk off the field during a game, George. He did some other pretty crass things. I mean, nobody
pulled his pants down, doing number two on the field. That's a joke. That's horrific. Yeah. Right, but why? Because he works for ESPN now, and I admit he's okay on ESPN. I watch him.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
He's pretty good. Has he rehabilitated that image? Just like sort of Chris Carter did. Yeah, even though Chris Carter had different issues, I don't think Carter was really ever a problem on the field. His problem was more off the field stuff. But they rehabilitated their image. Terrell Owens hasn't done that, even though he hasn't done anything wrong. He just hasn't rehabilitated. You know, he's not on Countdown. He's not on NFL Today, NFL Live, or anything like that. So. Like, that's what I mean. It's all of it's political. Because Morse is rehabilitated, he might get in quicker than Terrell Owens. Even though, like I said, I'll make the argument that Morse was, what he did was much worse than what Terrell Owens did. On the field, you know, as far as their production, it was very similar, very, very good. You know, who wouldn't want these guys starting for wide receiver for their teams? So it's just how you look at things sometimes. You know, and some guys are biased against other guys. You can have some writers who won't vote for Owens because maybe they covered San Fran. Other guys never covered Owens, so hey, no problem voting for him. They look at the numbers. And same thing goes with Randy Moss. It's, like I said, it's all personal views here. I gave up on this, worrying about this, Hall of Fame, MVP awards, Cy Young awards, whatever. Gave up worrying about it and caring about it a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, I used to get fired up about Hall of Fame stuff and particularly those MVP awards. And this guy got this award stolen from him. He deserved it. There's too many other people voting too many different ways for me to be able to worry about it. I used to get fired up about it. I just thought this class to me was kind of interesting because there's a seemingly blatant maneuver here by the writers to keep Owens out and let other players in that we find to be questionable. Jason Taylor gets in, defensive end. We went over his resume yesterday, 7th all-time in sacks. I don't think anybody would argue against his ability to make the Hall of Fame. Is he the greatest pass rusher of all time? No, but he's amongst them, so he gets in. All-pro kicker, 5-time all-pro kicker, Morton Anderson. He gets in. If you want to match kicking resumes, I don't think anybody's can beat his. So you can argue against place kickers being in if you like, but if you're going to have one in, he's the guy, as George said yesterday. Kenny Easley gets in. George and I talked about it yesterday, a somewhat truncated career for him as well. I think he only played 8 seasons, but impactful, and the seniors let him in. Kudos to Scott Engel, because I know he's a big Ken Easley fan. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones gets in as a contributor. Listen, you can love or hate this guy. I don't think there's any doubt, having just been at a stadium a couple of weeks ago, he's had a massive impact on the NFL. He has consistently challenged the commissioner and the league. He was a renegade owner when he came in, and I think he has helped the ownership in many ways find a way to, frankly, create new sources of revenue, not to mention creating this palace in Dallas and making them, frankly, America's team in one way or the other, always keeping them as a relevant talking point in this league.
Yeah, I mean, we all know, there's nothing really to add to Jerry Jones. As an owner, he's been fantastic. The revenue streams he's brought into the NFL are part of the big reasons that the salary cap's up to $160 million. They keep on bringing billions upon billions of dollars. He was a renegade
Absolutely
when he
right.
first came in with the marketing, how he went about things, and the NFL realized, oh my God, he's right. You know, as far as a GM, yeah, he's been pretty bad. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So I guess you got to separate one from the other. It sort of reminded me of Joe Torre. You know, in baseball, how, you know, he didn't get in as a player, even though you can make the argument he should have. But once he became manager, the overwhelming work of the two put him in the Hall of Fame. I think the same thing goes through with Jones. Yes, he's been a bad GM, but still, he does have 3 Super Bowls. So that's a feather in his cap as well, even though we all know it was Jimmy Johnson. I know that, but that's why he gets in. Like I said, I'm a Cowboy fan. As a GM, I wish he would, you know, leave, quit, stop making these decisions. As an owner, though, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt he's helped the NFL immensely.
Will you give him credit for what's happening now, though, with the talent stockpiled here? I mean, Right.
I mean,
so
he wanted to take Johnny Manziel
into that role. That's true.
You know, and he had to be talked out of that. There's no way he wanted to draft all these offensive linemen. It's not him. He wants to make the big splash. He has to be talked out of things. Like, he should be staying out of personnel decisions. If he does, the Cowboys get better. When he does, when he's involved, look, when have the Cowboys been good in Jones' tenure? Jimmy Johnson, Bill Parcells, and now that Steven, his son, has got more control. Not all the control, but more control to rein him in a little bit. That's when the Cowboys
And Steven's had the opportunity, obviously, to learn, really, over 25 years more. He's had the opportunity to learn the business, so people can say that it was handed to him, and what does he know? Well, now he's been in the football business for nearly 30 years, so you can give him the opportunity to learn personnel and figure out how to build this team, and it's worked, whether it's Steven acting alone or hiring the right people to influence him to make these decisions. He's done a really good job of stockpiling young talent here.
Dallas stepped in it, right? They got lucky with Dak Prescott. In football, it's all about the quarterback. You got a quarterback, you compete. You don't, you don't. It's really that simple. They got lucky. I'll say it again. Their 4th-round pick, they weren't expecting this from Dak. They tried to trade up. You know, they were looking at the Carson Wentz, but really making a big trade up. That was never going to happen. They tried to trade I forget who had the pick. I think Seattle had the pick for Paxton Lynch. Right? They tried to trade up to get him. Denver offered a better pick. Then they tried to trade up to get Cook. Connor Cook, but Oakland took him. Dak was their 4th choice, at least, that we know of. And it wasn't like they took him the first pick in the 4th round. He was their compensatory pick. They got lucky with Dak. No one saw this coming. If they did, he would have been a 4th-round pick.
Dak had a funny line at the award show last night where he said, "I'd like to thank all the other 31 teams for passing me up." He got a good laugh out of the crowd. I thought it was funny. But, yeah, I think you're right. The one thing I would say about Jerry Jones in relation to revenue, and then we'll head to a break, is that when he first came into the league, there were a lot of deals signed by Tagliabue and the owners saying, this is a league-wide deal with this soft drink company, or this is a league-wide deal for this is apparel. Jerry was like, no, it isn't. You don't have any right to tell me exactly what to sell in the stadium, whether it's Coke or Pepsi, or exactly what apparel my players have to wear in certain instances. And he challenged the NFL, and he took the NFL to court in a couple of instances, and he won. And I think he got the NFL owners thinking about what they needed to own and exactly what they needed to do in order to make money. He's not the only businessman in the NFL, but I can tell you he was very much a renegade owner to start, and now I think a lot of them look towards him for some guidance in business matters.
I think that's obvious. That's why he got in. I think that's a big reason. If they owners didn't want to get him, then he'd be out. But I think everybody realized what he bought money. Money, as a businessman, I don't know if there's anyone better. Really, I don't know if there's anyone better. You know, as a as a GM, I don't know if there's anyone worse. But as a as a businessman, you can't knock him. Every NFL owner, there's a reason these franchises are worth billions of dollars now. He's a big part. He's also a big part of why that team's back in L.A. He backed it. They got there.
Yeah, no doubt. So, all right, that's it. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Mike and George until 10 o'clock. Welcome back, Mike and George, until 10. Now, attention, daily fantasy sports players. You can now get your DFS picks before the sun rises. Join Tony Cicada for DFS Today, presented by DailyRoto.com at 6:30 every weekday morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Early matchups, contrarian plays, analysis, and players to consider, all from one of the industry's best daily fantasy players. Cock-a-doodle, do you want to win? If so, check out DFS Today with Tony Cicada at 6:30 every morning on demand at fntsy.com/radio or download the podcast on iTunes. You can hear Tony pretty much every day for hours a day, both on DFS Today, Roto Experts in the Morning. He's going to have some lineup lock shows, which he does every day with Benny Riccardi. I can tell you that the schedule is shaking up a little bit. George and I aren't going anywhere. We'll be here every Saturday and Sunday from 7 to 10. George is going to be doing old school fantasy each and every day. I believe it starts. Does it start tomorrow or next Monday, George?
Old school is starting tomorrow, 10 to 11. Scott, Corey, and I.
There you go. So Scott Engel, Corey Parson, George. It was previously at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. It moves from 10 to 11 each and every morning. So just shaking up the shows. And we have an all, you know, we have an award-winning show now on Target Fantasy. I believe that's going to be from 11 to 1 every day. And that's going to be Jake Seeley along with Joe Pisapia. They continue to dominate the airwaves there. So Benny Riccardi's on that show as well. I apologize. So, you know, George, I was just looking over an article yesterday after we got off the show. It's sort of about milestones and storylines for the MLB season that I saw on MLB.com. And there's a lot of players. You know, we were talking about Hall of Famers, a guy that probably a couple of years ago people didn't necessarily think of necessarily as a Hall of Famer, but he's continued to hang in there and continue to compile up big numbers, is Adrian Beltre. Now his resume is impressive. I think he'll be a lock to get into the Hall of Fame when he steps down, but he's really on the precipice of a ton of milestones coming in. He's sitting on 2,942 hits, so he just needs 58 more to get to that 3,000 milestone. You assume that gets him in automatically, yes?
Yeah, that alone will get him in. He won't have to worry about it. I mean, that's why certain numbers are silly. What if he only got? If he only finished his career as 2,991, if he because he didn't get those nine extra hits. I mean, come on. He's known as a great defender. You know, I know there's not enough credit that gets to that, but he's a very good defensive.
I agree
baseman.
With you.
He's a good teammate. Just don't pat him on the head. for people don't know, he sort of freaks out when people pat him on the head. Just doesn't like that. Strange.
Prince Fielder did it at his retirement press conference on his way into the room. I don't know if you caught that, but Beltre was sitting there waiting patiently for Prince Fielder to give his farewell address, and on the way into the room, he rubbed his hand over Beltre's head, who he had like a mini freak out before he realized it was Fielder who was heading to the microphone. So
yeah, not a big fan of that. I mean, you look at it. He's going to get 3,000 hits, right? Maybe if he can play two, maybe three more years, depends on how his years go. 500 home runs, he's 55 short, so we need 28 and 27 over the next 2 years. That might be too much to ask. Might not. Did hit 32 last year, but hit 18 and 19 the 2 years before that. So it's a tough ask, but how can you not put him in? I mean, really, what would be the stance of not putting him in? 3,000 hits, 500 home runs. How many guys have all those numbers?
Yeah, check out this combination. His fifth homer this season, his ninth double this season, and his 58th hit give him 450 homers, 600 doubles, and 3,000 hits, respectively. Only three others in Major League history have that combo, and I know these might be random numbers, but when you put them together, the only three guys are Hank Aaron, Stan Musial, and Carl Yastrzemski, obviously lockdown Hall of Famers, all three.
And you tell us that, I'll say it again, he's a Gold Glove. The Gold Glove's a joke. Yeah, the biggest joke award going, by the way, is Gold Glove. As far as all the awards I complain about, Gold Glove is a complete travesty, but he's still that kind of defender. You put all the offensive numbers and excuse me, and his defense, mortal lock.
Yeah, and more number, More numbers coming with Beltre, too. He'll become the 21st major leaguer to reach 5,000 career total bases. He's going to pass Griffey, Frank Robinson, Rafi Palmeiro, Eddie Murray, just a ton of guys who are in their own right, and not just Hall of Famers, but in the first mention of Hall of Famers, Ken Griffey breaking the all-timer.
And let's also not forget, people are going to say, oh, he plays in Texas. Well, you know, for the first, 12 seasons of his career, a little longer, played in Dodgers, Chavez Ravine, Seattle. Not exactly good hitting ballparks.
Yeah. What do you think the long-term regrets are from those teams for letting him go, considering he's continued to produce at an advanced age?
Oh, they're major regrets. They have to be. I mean, Dodgers didn't even have the money back then. You know, I was under different ownership. They were sort of a cheapskates, believe it or not, before the new owners took over.
Right.
So, I mean, he left the year after he had 48 home runs. Went to Seattle, and, you know, same thing happened there. The numbers were there with Seattle, although those last year in Seattle, he was a little banged up. You know, it was the year he only played 111. He was only at 8 home runs, so I see why they might have thought he was coming down, because his home runs had come down 26, 25, 8. They may have even thought he was on the back end of his career. You know, it was just after the steroids, so 30. Once you hit 30, was a bad thing. But going to Texas has really revitalized him.
No doubt about it. There's a few other storylines. We'll get to it a little bit later in the show. I thought Beltre was a guy to focus on simply because he has had a massive career, and once you really start to see the stark numbers this year, it will impress many people that maybe weren't aware of it. That's 1 hour down. That's that music playing me off like the Academy Awards, but we'll be back for another 2 hours. We got 1 hour down. We got 2 hours to go. We are just about 10 hours from game time, folks. It's Mike and George until 10 o'clock.